Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
That is caught! Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? He got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Kerry Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Good evening. Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Wednesday in March with the CBA still unsettled and still no clear picture. We thought a week ago, Jeff Loggeman, that we would know this week where they stood. 2 weeks ago, we thought the thing would happen as well. They've extended, and now it's the matter of whether they can get a deal done. Now, the reason I bring it up to start is obviously it's the pressing topic. Depressing and the pressing. Depressing to a lot of fans that want to talk football, and pressing to a lot of us who sit and look at this and have a tie to it, you know, a financial tie to it.
The football clock is off kilter.
Yeah,
I mean, usually this time of year you're talking free agency and the visits have started and you're not. And when last week we talked about, what would happen, and I thought that they would, extend the talks, and I thought, you'd ask me how long I thought, and I said a week. And I don't know if it's going to get done. What is it? The new deadline now is Friday at midnight, right?
Yeah, Friday at midnight.
And if it has to be extended more than just a day to iron out the details, then it's going to last for a while.
I asked a guy who works in the building, and not part of the negotiating team or anything like that, just a guy. I said, what do you think? He said, yesterday I would have told you I feel real good about it. And today, I'm not sure that I do.
Yeah.
And obviously you can look at the news cycle and see what's come up and what's come out, or it's just the nature of the fact that, not knowing leads you one day to feel good and the next day to wonder.
Yeah, but this is how those things work. I mean, all of a sudden you think that, you're staring off the edge of a cliff, and then boom, it's done. They worked it out, so... you just never know. And, the one thing that I've tried to do is I don't want to have an alarm clock going off to where I have to check the headlines every half hour or every hour.
Right.
I try not to read up on any of the news until the end of the day, because to me, even that's off too much, but I mean, it's our job,
Sure.
We've got to kind of stay updated on what's going on, but I just choose not to listen to any of the banter or speculation throughout the day. And at the end of the day, I want to read the headlines and see if there any progress was made, see what the reports are saying, and then leave it at that.
Okay. Well, I'll read two headlines to you. But first, let me give you the numbers, folks, and you know it if you've listened to this program or any Jaguars radio shows over the years. Our phone number, 355-NFL1. 800-355-NFL1 if you are outside the local calling area. And, of course, these days, Twitter, Jacksonville Jaguar, pardon me, Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars, and Twitter's at Jags Voice. So you got a lot of different ways that you can take part in our program this evening. Of course, the number, 800-355-NFL1. So here's a headline for you. Report, agreement reached on rookie wage scale. Jason Cole of Yahoo Sports reports the two sides have reached a compromise on a rookie wage scale. How important is it? And does it lead to anything, or is it simply that they've been talking enough they finally agreed on something?
To me, that was probably one of the easiest discussions that they were going to have. I mean, the veterans knew that the rookie contracts had just gotten out of control. The owners knew that. So to me, that should have been hammered out eons ago. But the good thing is that they're talking about the details now. I mean, if they're talking about details now, the biggest thing that they've got to talk about, though, is just slicing up the pie. I mean, that's the problem. Had a little sit-down interview with Steve Wrigley, and I was trying to explain to him to help him better understand what the argument is about dividing up the pie. And you have to go back to the revenue models that were used before and now. And for the easiest explanation for people to understand it, back in the old agreement, they had a designated revenue model, and it said that certain categories of income are split with the players at a 62% or 60% rate.
It was 62 before they changed to the other model.
And with that 62% number, you know, the categories of income that were divvied up were, you know, the gate, the obviously the network television deals, concessions,
licensing,
the suites, you know, the
right.
custom suites. And there were some categories of income that weren't included in that.
Local broadcast, naming rights, things like that.
And that was how the owners, what they viewed as how they covered their expenses, their cost, how they would recoup their quote-unquote investments into the future. Well, now they're in a total football model, total football revenue model. And this plainly states that, what, 60% now of all revenues go to the players.
Right.
And why does that not work for the owners? Well, if Wayne Weaver wants to spend, and to make this simple, let's say he wants to spend $50 to invest in something that makes a dollar. So he has a $1 gross income, but in reality, it's a 50 cent net income. Well, the gross revenue is the only thing that the total football model realizes. So what the players would have to take 60 cents out of that, or $60 out of the 100. So if Wayne Weaver spends $50, he makes $100. The $100 is the number that counts to the players. The players keep 60% of that. They get $60. Well, wait a minute. Wayne Weaver spent $50 to make $50 to make $100.
Right.
He would actually lose $10. And so that's where the problem lies, and where the owner's saying, hey, we can't invest in the future because we don't, or the county doesn't account for investment. Stadiums, you know, Wayne was talking about in his press conference, upgrading the South End Zone scoreboard, Videotron, all those type of things. And I understand that completely. And I'm all for that, that some way, shape, or form, the owner should have an accounting for cost in this labor deal. I don't think there's any question that they have to in order for the game to grow. But the players got a sweetheart deal with Gene Upshaw and Paul Tagliabue, and they don't want to go back. And the problem is that you've got a new union leader who, if he goes back away from what Gene got, the players are going to say, what did we hire you for? You know, and the owners gave up what they had, and so they want to get some of that back. You know, so therein lies the problem. I mean, it's just a matter of splitting up the pie, and I agree with the owners from this standpoint. There should be some accounting for costs in the revenue model, but there's got to be a way to compromise. Because you know what? You know, I look back on some of the games that we saw last year. I mean, the players are the one that makes the magic happen on Sunday. That's
Absolutely.
What it's all about. You know, it's what it's all about. And I just hope that when they get a final deal taken care of, that there's some common sense from the union side on how to split that money up. And I'm talking about taking care of the players in the future, because you're going to be taking care of them one way or another. We know that players sometimes have a history of not having their money spent wisely or spending their money wisely. So take care of them in the future, that they may have to give up some of that quote-unquote paragraph 5 salary, which is money in their pocket now, in order to be able to better take care of them down the road. That's just
some sort of an annuity.
Well, they've got an annuity program. They've got a 401k, and those are two of the best that there is. But the biggest thing to me is future health care, orthopedically, for some of these players.
Yeah. You know,
because a
that.
Lot of friends of mine that I played with, you know, that they need attention to certain body parts from an orthopedic standpoint, and they don't have the ability to have things paid for. You know, and that's tough.
One more headline, and we'll take a break in the next 4 minutes, I promise, folks, and we'll move on. We'll talk football, because I can hear radios clicking off if we get too much onto this from a labor perspective. But it's the other headline is league union dispute the contents of the players' past information demands. If you haven't been following it, what the players say, they want full transparency into the owners' books. The owners have said, you've got all the information you need. Then they're talking about profitability, and Roger Goodell offered and accounted by an independent auditor, an accounted list of which teams were profitable and which were not. And the players said, that's not acceptable. That's not the information we want. We want the transparent data. We want to see it all. Your thoughts on whether the players have enough information or whether the owners should open their books?
Well, and I kind of have an issue with this because, I mean, every year they have an accounting, you know, to determine what that number is for the total football revenue.
Exactly.
I mean, so aren't the books open? I mean, are there segments of the owner's revenue that are not shared? If there is, I don't know what they are.
Well, the word is profitability. They evidently what they want, And I think that takes away from the overall argument which you made about whether or not there's money to invest in future infrastructure. But they want to know which teams are losing money. And for that, they'd have to see where the team's expenditures go as opposed to just the revenue that comes in. Mm-hmm. So they want more information. And I'm just curious, having been at that table, what you think.
I just don't understand what they want. They're seeing what the accounting is. I mean, it's done by an independent firm to determine what each team has to pay. So I don't understand all that. That's the one area that to me is gray. I don't get. Is there a big source of income and expenditure by the owners that the players have no idea about? And if so, are the owners sharing that information or are the owners unwilling to share that information? I just don't know the answer to that.
Well, and we'll find out. That seems to be the tipping point now to getting a deal done is whether the players believe they're getting an accurate assessment of where the teams are. And the owners, of course, think that they are at this point. So that's enough for labor. We'll come back and we'll talk about football. If you have a labor question, 800-355-NFL1, Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. Twitter's at Jags Voice. We'll cover the gamut when Jaguars This Week returns only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Welcome back. Jaguars This Week rolls along here. We'll go till straight up 7 o'clock. Again, we do not have to be limited to a labor issue radio show. Although, as you look at what's going on in the National Football
League, it's the main headline.
It really is. There's no free agency for us to deal with this year. There is almost...
What's amazing is that this time of year, typically you're talking free agency and the draft stuff is kind of squelched. But, right. I mean, right now the draft stuff is really at the forefront because there is no free agency.
It is, but how far can you really go with it?
Here's the question is that, we talk about overanalyzing the draft. I mean, we're going to get to the point where our minds are going to blow up.
Yeah, more than ever. I mean, we could talk about Cam Newton and Ryan Mallett and their workouts yesterday and whether Ryan Mallett ran a 4.940 or a 5.340, and if Cam Newton is more than Achilles Smith, then
just to kind of tease something along those lines, because you're talking about college quarterbacks, today sat down for Jaguars.com and did an interview with the new quarterback coach of the Jaguars, Mike Shepard.
Okay.
And he had some really interesting things to say about the draft and the quarterbacks, and I'll just give you one little tidbit. He just talked about the middle rounds, about how talent-rich that position is. So just a little nugget for what's to come up at Jaguars.com with quarterbacks coach Mike Shepard. Good guy. He's been around the league a bunch. I don't know how many different places that he's been. And kind of had a little fun with him talking about, where he was at last year, which was in Cincinnati with Chad Ochocinco. And Terrell Owens, holy cow. We talked
Does
about
– Does he have any hair left?
We talked, a couple years ago about how the wide receivers coach Todd Monken here had to deal with Jerry Porter, Matt Jones, and Reggie Williams, which,
it's not very easy.
You put Chad Ochocinco Johnson and then Terrell Owens. One, wow. Yeah. But, he had some surprising things to say about Terrell Owens. And
When's that going to be posted on the website?
I think in the next couple of days once they kind of get done with it. So look for it.
One football nugget with respect to the Jaguars, although I don't know that anyone's surprised by this. It was the Jaguars' decision, the election, to allow Mike Sims Walker's contract to expire and move on at that position.
Right, and a lot of people interpreted that he was released. No, his contract is expired.
He'll become a free agent when there's a CBA.
He'll be a free agent when there is free agency.
Not surprising to you?
No,
Mike Thomas kind of grabbed that role from him last year.
Not so much. It's not so much about Mike as it is about, and I'm saying Mike Thomas, as it is about the other position itself. Mike Thomas and Mike Sims Walker play almost two similar roles in that they're both receivers that go across the middle. I don't want to say possession type because I think Mike Thomas has got a little bit of a deep speed to him. But when you want to have two wide receivers on the field, obviously you want to have one guy that has a deep element to him. And Mike Sims Walker didn't really have that. Mike Thomas was more productive in that other role. And the new guy, Jason Hill, who they found, I thought did a tremendous job last year and showed that deep speed. And so if you're going to pick one or the other, if that's kind of what you're faced with, then I think Jason Hill with a little bit more speed vertically will help.
We have a question from Facebook from Craig down in Sydney, Australia. He wonders how D'Anthony Smith has recovered from his Achilles. We don't obviously
have
medical reports.
Everything that we're being told is that it's good and he's working hard. You know, it's kind of the same thing with Aaron Campman. But, you know, D'Anthony Smith is going through an injury and a rehabilitation on something that is, you know, I don't know if many people have come back from it and have been the same. But here's the question. What was he before? We didn't know.
No, we didn't have any idea.
You know, so the hard part in this is from an analyst standpoint, which, you know, I consider myself. So in training camp, where do you judge him as being at when you never really knew where he was? Because we didn't see so much of him last year, just for a short period of time. So I don't know, you know. But everything that I'm hearing from Joe Cullen, both on Aaron Campman and Smith, have both been very good. But we'll find out.
All right, in the 2 minutes we have before we break for news at the bottom of the hour, Tiki Barber is unretiring.
Yeah.
The unrestrained joy.
You know, I never expected that out of a Virginia graduate. You know, a guy who's 36, retired, left the game, thought that it was going to be a very wealthy career in broadcasting, didn't turn out that way. You know, got the affair going on with the intern while his wife is pregnant with twins. Not a whole lot of class there.
No, he really he did it to himself, because I think most people would agree that he was a talented guy who could have been coached to be a very good broadcaster.
Yeah, and I kind of lost respect for Tiki when he took shots at Tom on the way out.
Yeah. Yeah, and he became a controversial figure, and that was never him at...
No, and took shots at Eli Manning. You know, I don't want to say there's an unwritten code, but there is a code. You know, and when you leave somewhere, you don't burn bridges, you don't talk about what happened, and certainly you don't give any of the inner working details from your perspective.
Right.
I lost a lot of respect for Tiki that whole year and a half in which he departed from the Giants. I continue to have great respect for his brother,
Rondé. Yeah.
Because Rondé is a player who keeps his mouth shut, comes to work every day, and is a fantastic football player. But Tiki, eh.
You don't have to stretch very far to see at 36 that he's coming back probably
for the money. I mean, you know, come on, Tiki.
Yeah.
I mean, you're 36, you're a running back. You know, you failed as a broadcaster. You didn't make any friends when you were in the broadcasting business, and that's a business you got to make friends in, and you didn't make any friends. He's not my favorite Virginia alum. I would put him up there with Don Majkowski.
Who is your favorite Virginia alum as we go to break? And then we'll ask you, Joe, who yours is.
You know, that's a good
number 56.
Good question.
Is that Rondé Barber's number?
I got a lot of favorites. You know, there was a guy, you know, probably my favorite alum that I had great respect for when I was playing there was a guy by the name of Joel Dempsey. Joel Dempsey was a tight end, graduated in 4 years, had a redshirt year, and wanted to use that last year of eligibility to play. And he actually took the LSATs, got an unbelievable score, and that's for the law school entrance exam, actually was accepted to Virginia's law school, and actually played his fourth year of eligibility in his fifth year at Virginia while he was in law school.
Yeah, that's more than impressive.
That, to me, is impressive. And then we had another guy who was a Jefferson Scholar, which means that you're incredibly bright, academic scholarship, you know, the whole nine yards, and you can create your own major because you're so bright and you can be as broad as you want to be in your academic subjects. And I think his name was Dave, Cardigan or something like that. I can't remember his name, but I mean, the guy was incredibly bright. But you know what? When he came out to practice every day, he was as hardworking on the football field as anybody. Loved him.
Good guys, always hard workers. We'll take a break. News is next. News Talk Radio WOKV. We'll get to the phones when we return. 800-355-NFL1. Depend on it. Back. Jaguars this week rolling into half hour number two here. And again, we'll do our best to keep it as, I don't want to say labor-free because that's
light.
A major issue. Labor light. We'll
keep
do it
light.
As we can. But we've got John from Green Cove Springs. Hello, John. Welcome to the program. How are you tonight?
All right, guys. How you doing?
Good John.
You. Okay. One thing is for them asking to open up the books, I mean, I just had a thing happen where I work, where Friday they ask us that this year in July we always have our annual raise, and saying we want 100% people, you know, to vote on this, but we don't want to give you a raise, which doesn't really look like they're really losing any money, but they're saying we can't give you a raise. And, I mean, could you see, you know, going to the NFL players and saying, well, we can't afford to have the full roster, so we're going to cut it down to 45, and that way everybody can play?
Well, not with an 18-game schedule for sure, because the Players Association wants a 58-man roster. You know, no, I don't see it going down in terms of the number of roster spots because, I mean, Jeff, we hear about it all the time. I mean, you got guys banged up and beat up, and they talk about the players they don't have. No, I there's no way they're going to have fewer roster spots. There's no way the Players Union allows that.
I'll say this again. All this talk about 18-game schedules, I'm with Mr. Rooney. There is no outcry for an 18-game schedule.
No.
There's an outcry to eliminate, you know, preseason games that are not that enjoyable to watch. From a game standpoint, from a competitive standpoint. You know, and Roger Goodell has got it all wrong. He's twisting the facts. He's saying that the fans want an 18-game schedule. No, they don't, Roger. They just don't want four preseason games, and they don't want to pay full price. You know, a full ticket value price for a preseason game.
Have we ever had anyone call this show and say,
never.
Yes, I've got to have 18 games?
Never. Never. You know, and there were some comments made by Eric Winston that I thought that were pretty sharp.
The offensive tackle for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, he made some comments about how, you know, the NFL Network has the Thursday night game, and the league has been keeping that for the network, you know, for obvious reasons. They want to grow that network. But how much more money could they make if that were put out to bid?
Well, I mean, they could sell it.
Make a lot of money.
Well, think about what ESPN pays for the Monday night package.
A ton.
It's an enormous amount of money.
So,
I
don't know.
You take away from your network then.
The 18-game schedule to me is, I mean, that's the great thing about the NFL. It's 16 games, and it makes every game so important because there are only 16. You add, the more games you add, the more you make it like basketball and the more that you make it like baseball. Now, I know the numbers are way different from 18 to what is baseball, 162, and what is basketball, 78, 80?
No, it's 82.
82?
Hockey's,
you know,
the
so
same.
You're a far cry from that, but still, you know, having 16 games, you know, and a lot of these owners haven't played 16 games. I can tell you, man, playing 16 games is tough enough.
Well, you know,
to play 18, oh. And they talk about, well, if we take away two preseason games, then, you know, the body can withstand the extra snaps of an 18-game schedule. That's different.
What if they could get together on almost every issue and come close on the number, and the tipping point was the owner wanted the 18 games? The ownership side wanted 18 games. Is that a deal breaker?
I don't think it's a deal breaker, you know, but it's – they've got to expand the rosters if they have 18 games. And the other thing that they need to do is have something similar to baseball and have a DL to where you can put a guy on injured reserve and bring him back in 3 to 4 or 5, 6 weeks, whatever it is, without having to lose that roster spot for the entire year.
Has it always been that when you put a guy on injured reserve, he was done for the year?
I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think it is. I have to go back and research it. But there was a time where I think guys could be put on the physically unable to perform list during the season and be able to return from it 6 weeks later. It wasn't always. And then the reason I say this is 1997 that John Yurkovic broke his leg and he was on IR as the playoff run. It was 97 mm-hmm. because they were playing with Ronaldo and Seth on the inside. And I can remember, like today, like it was yesterday, that Yurko said, hey, I'm ready to go. It's December. I'm ready to go. And, of course, he couldn't because he was on IR.
He was on IR, yeah. Since I came in the league, there was nothing like a DL.
Yeah.
89. From 89 on, it was either you're on the roster or you're on IR for the season.
I think there was a time where that was. I'll have to research it, though, and make sure. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. John, to go back and answer your question one more time, There will not be fewer jobs on NFL rosters. There will be more. We'll just leave that one at that. And then you just start looking at what's going on in the National Football League, and everyone's eyes are turned to Washington, D.C.
Well, I just hope that we get a resolution this week. And like I said before, if it doesn't happen this week, hold on. Yeah, Joe.
From the owner's standpoint, playing devil's advocate, what would be the problem with having a certain type of DL? What would be the bad thing?
I don't think there is a bad thing to it. I really don't. I don't think there's a negative to it at all. I mean, give you an example. In 98, you know, when I was playing here, I tore the bicep tendon off of the bone.
Opening day.
And it was essentially an 8 to a 10 week injury.
Okay.
Could I have stayed on the active roster? Yeah, but, you know, it would have been for, you know, basically week 12, week 13 that I would have been available.
Doesn't affect your money at all, right?
I mean, it didn't affect my money, and some players that won't affect some players, if they go to IR, they have a split contract. But typically those are the late round draft picks and the players that don't have, you know, in free agency a lot of leverage and agree to a split contract.
So
which means they get paid this if they're on the active roster, and then they get this amount of money if they're on injured reserve.
So depending on the kind of person you are, your constitution, so to speak, if you're ready to play, you want to play.
Yeah. I mean, I would have liked to have had the option to go in 98 on some type of DL, and Tom wouldn't have felt that, hey, I need to have that roster spot, you know, to replace you, and kept me, you know, if he had a DL, he could have just put me on some DL list for 6 weeks or whatever, and then had the option to use me at the end of the season.
In the scheme of everything that's floating back and forth, where does that stand? Is that high up on the list of negotiation?
Well, that's all part. I mean, that's probably going to come into play once they get to the money split. That has to be decided along with the 18-game schedule, because those two are married.
Everything else will fall into place once they get the money split.
Once you figure that out.
Those are all just negotiations.
That's what I thought.
Then as far as the injury rules and the roster limits, it doesn't matter to the owners, because once they agree to the money.
The percentage. Yeah.
Then how many ways does it get split up? Yeah. You know, if the salary cap is going to be $100 million and there's 53 guys, the 53 guys split that up. If the roster goes to 58 or 60, then the 60 split that up.
Right. They'll figure all those things out once they get the money split. We'll take a break, come back one more segment. Jaguars This Week, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Welcome back, Jaguars This Week. One more segment, about 10 minutes left, and we've got callers on the line, so let's grab Ed, who joins us from Orange Park. Ed, welcome to the program.
Thanks, guys. I got one question. Are they still discussing the rookie salary structure? Because I think that's something that they definitely have to address.
It's being reported by Jason Cole of Yahoo Sports that they have actually come to an agreement on how the rookie wage scale would work. And I'm calling it up right now, but essentially what they're talking about is first-round picks would earn free agency after 4 years, which means they would get to that big check, that big payday, if they've earned it, faster. And it says that players drafted after the first round will be limited to 3-year contracts. So it's hard to know, but Cole reported that the owner's original offer for the number one overall pick would have been a 5-year, $19 million contract with only $6 million guaranteed. Which is like 1995 numbers. That's what it was for Bocelli when he came in. And by comparison, you know, Sam Bradford got $50 million guaranteed on a 6-year deal. So,
which is insane.
Yeah. So it's somewhere in between. That's where they were offering, and of course the players had what Bradford got. But it is being reported now that they have reached an agreement on the rookie wage scale.
That is great, because rookies who've never played a game in the NFL – do not need to make $50 million. Now, Bradford's a great quarterback, or looks to be, going to be a great quarterback, but to give him $50 million without him throwing one NFL pass to me is insane.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Ed, right on the money, in that, to me, though, what they ought to do is limit everybody to 3-year contracts and let everybody be able to get the free agency after year three. I mean, heck, if they're good players, then they deserve to make money. They deserve to get paid accordingly. And at the same time, if they're not a good player, then they shouldn't get paid. And, you know, heck, How many guys get to free agency anyway? The team that has them has their rights, and when he's under contract, have the ability to extend them under their current deal anyway. To me, that was a no-brainer. You know, the amount of money that some of these guys have been making coming out has just been insane. And, I mean, that's the easiest thing in the world to accomplish. But, that's, you know, and here's the thing, and I remember when I served on the executive committee, Gene Upshaw would fight a tooth and nail to not have the rookie pay scale cut. And I never understood why he thought that. And I started to understand it, but his thinking, I thought, was outdated. And that rookie contracts used to be the number one driving force for salaries in the NFL overall, period, back pre-free agency. There was no, I mean, the players couldn't leave a team. And so the only right that they had was to hold out to get more money. Well, you've got free agency now. That's what's driving salary contracts is free agency. Does the rookie high picks contribute to that? Yeah, somewhat, but it doesn't drive it like it used to. So for me, it's an easy decision to limit the size of the contracts of the rookies today.
And the veteran players are in full support of that.
Absolutely.
And Kevin Mawai came out. He was the president of the Players Association in 2009 when he was still playing for the Titans and said as much.
Well, and Gene, when he was still alive, was still saying, no, we're not going to touch rookie salaries. I was going, how can you say that?
Something has to
every player in the National Football League thinks that, except for the ones that, you know, were just drafted, thinks that that was out of control. How could you argue that it was a good thing? I didn't see that.
Ed has left us. Appreciate the phone call. Let's go grab Bob in Middleburg. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I was listening to Jeff a few minutes ago, and he said that the owners are saying that if they cut out two preseason games, that that'll open up and make room for 18 regular season games. I don't understand that mindset, especially when the starters don't even play a full game in the preseason. How are they going to compare that to two regular season games?
You're right, Bob, and that's kind of – I was going to make the number comparison. We had to take a break. Give you an idea, Bob. When I was a starter, you look at the four preseason games. First game, 12 to 15 plays. Second game, 20, 25 plays. Third game would be the 30, 35 plays. So –
fourth game, you wouldn't play at all, really.
No. I mean, maybe not even at all, maybe not even dress. So in the first three games, you probably got enough snaps that would equal one game as a starter. So how can they say that eliminating a couple preseason games is, you know, it's equal to having two additional regular season games? That's not the case. It's not the case. So
negotiating positions. Plain and simple. Appreciate the phone call, 355-NFL-1.
You know, the ones who are going to be
6351.
The guys that are going to be really happy to not have, if they do go to 18 games, only have two preseason games, are the backups. Because, I mean, now, you got to get your starters ready now. Yeah. I mean, if you have only two games, I mean, your first game's probably going to be, you know, a 50-50 type proposition, and then the second game is going to be, you know, mostly your backups and evaluation of roster spots, you know.
Will it make it harder for a rookie coming in to make the team? If they have to make an evaluation based on on less time, because OTAs are going to get cut.
Yeah, see, heck, Brian, we watched training camp. I mean,
just curious if there might be some people who will stick with something.
How many times could I sit there and make the roster cuts for you after about the first 2 weeks of training camp?
You made them after the first week this year.
I mean, pretty much, once you saw them in pads for a week, you pretty much had an idea.
All right, so it doesn't impact that at all?
No, and you know, you wanted to see them in games because obviously the games are different than practice, but at the same time, if you've got two games to evaluate, that's enough to know. And even if a guy that you're not sure on, I mean, you're going to find a way to either, one, put him on practice squad, and two, if the roster is expanded, you're going to keep that player now anyway, you know, who may have been a maybe keeper or maybe not key.
And also, wouldn't you see more of what the Jaguars did this year, playing Atlanta for a little bit? Maybe you see more teams come together.
If they allow it, that might go away. Remember, they're talking about lessening the demands of training camp, not increasing them.
Well, you need to practice.
Well, here's a good thought. Here's an example.
Talking about practice.
Here's an example I give you.
We've
got a Twitter question, and it says, any word on John Estes' recovery? I think he's a dark horse for next season.
He's fine.
Okay. Yeah, because he just did the MCL, right?
Yeah, he's fine.
All right, but here's the thought. Does a guy like John Estes get enough time to show the coaches what he's got if they cut back on all the OTAs and things
yeah.
and the preseason games? Do you lose?
He was a lineman. What did you really learn anyway in OTAs when they weren't in pads?
Okay.
You know, I mean, people are making more of this OTA business than really what it should be. I mean, you know, what, 20 years ago, they didn't have OTAs.
Right.
Well, gosh, they got ready to play a football game. They were able to discover lots of hot prospects back then, weren't they?
Yeah, and most people tell you that was the golden era.
Come on. I mean, it's not that hard. I mean, you got training camp and pads, and to me, the OTAs are just that was Jimmy Johnson's creation. He did it. He won Super Bowls, and people thought, well, that was the secret recipe to winning Super Bowls. Didn't have anything to do with the Herschel Walker trade, did it?
Yeah, probably did. Yeah, it probably did.
Didn't have anything to do with all the extra draft picks that he had compiled.
Yeah, no.
And the great draft picks that he made, you know, including Troy Aikman, Mark Stepnoski, Darryl Johnston, Michael Irvin, who was already there. I mean, the number of players, Mark Tuane. I mean, holy cow, the amount of talent that he was able to acquire from the draft. But it was the OTAs. The OTAs, the year-round training is what made them successful. BS.
All right. You're not going to pay too close attention over the next, 2 days? That's what's left in this thing?
I'm going to start following the draft, man. I got to get my attention off of the labor
off of this
stuff.
Thing. And we'll talk. You know, look, obviously next week we'll have a clearer picture, or we think we'd have a clearer picture of where everything's at, and we'll start focusing our attention on the draft, which is really it's
gosh, not that far.
No, when you consider that we're already at the 9th
of
March.
Only a couple turkeys away.
Couple of turkeys?
Yeah, you know, a couple of turkeys.
Turkey season open?
Are you talking about wild turkey?
It ain't far.
It's not that far away.
And we'll be on the air.
Oh, really? What are we doing?
We will have a broadcast.
We'll
right?
have draft a broadcast. As long as there's a draft. Well, prime time, Thursday night, the
28th.
7:30.
I like that.
We'll kick it off at 7:30.
What time does the draft start? 7, right?
7:30.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Okay, 7:30. It's a prime time, first round. How many minutes? 5 minutes?
10.
10 minutes per
ten
for
per
the first round.
And
in the first round.
I don't know if did they do this last year or is it new this year? If a team trades, the team that's then on the clock doesn't have the full 10 minutes. They've got the remainder of what's left.
That's good.
Which means if
speed
yeah,
it up.
Somebody trades to somebody.
I remember that from last year, so it's probably
they're doing
new.
That this year. Yeah, I thought
that
they may
the
have done it last year.
Going to be working. The phone is going to be busy prior to the draft,
yeah.
as it should be.
Yeah.
You know, you get rid of all that posturing and smoke screen stuff and just get down to doing business.
All right, Lucky. Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you.
See you next week, folks. Have a great night.